is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. As a quick note to our listeners, we will not be talking about any of the pre-presidential romantic involvements of this president of the United States on this special holiday broadcast, friends. You know, the media has made a circus out of putting a porn star and Playboy bunnies in the national spotlight. To think at one time that 60 Minutes was a highly regarded news show. You know, the current lynch mob mentality of the major networks and cable news outlets is nothing less than gutter journalism. Well, in all sincerity, if you really think about this, you know, the behavior you are seeing does less to discredit our president, but rather it shows how far journalism has sunk as a profession. And with that, I want to take this opportunity to wish you a most memorable Easter Sunday and Passover, friends. Listen, on the show here at the Top Ear Viewpoint, we will talk about chaos in the Middle East as protest and violence erupts in Gaza. We have a special segment, America the Beautiful, a unique experiment. Look forward to bringing that to you. As well as all the trade tariffs, China, Korea, Western Europe. We'll touch on that as well in our discussion panel at the end of the show here. Let's start off right at the top of the show here, please, and welcome on Jim McKay. Jim is a political commentator and radio producer. Well, Jim brings his diverse analytical skills and his love of history and our republic, along with the appreciation of the founders and Constitution, to Viewpoint This Sunday. Every week, he's typically behind the scenes and producing, but today he's on air with us. It's good to have him. And, of course, Ava Armstrong is a political commentator, radio personality, and Ava is an author who writes about the everyday men and women with a focus on patriotism. She calls herself a corporate dropout these days. Interesting words there, Ava. So, indeed. So, all right. So listen, this weekend, we celebrate the most significant holidays of a Judaic and Christian heritage, Passover and Easter. At a time when we observe and rejoice in our religious heritage, we find ourselves in a more somber and threatening time in our history. We want to explore different events on the show today, including things that are going on in China, Korea, Western Europe, but also bring it back to America the Beautiful. So we're in for a special holiday show here today, and I want to start right here at the top here with you all and talk about chaos in the Middle East. Well, the Associated Press is reporting here. Mass marches are being led by Gaza's ruling Hamas group and touted as the launch of a six-week-long protest campaign. So here's the nitty-gritty on this. Palestinian health officials say 15 Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire and more than 750 hit by live rounds are the claims. Well, this will make it one of the bloodiest days certainly in Gaza since at least the 2014 cross-border war between Israel and Hamas. The question I have for you two up front, is this a moment of truth? You know, Israel says it will expand response if Gaza clashes go on. And this gets kind of interesting, but here's what they're saying. Protest organizers have said that these mass marches will continue on until May 15th, which is the 70th anniversary of Israel's creation. Now, Palestinians mark that day as their Nakba, or catastrophe, in a reference to the 1948 war over Israel's creation. Jim McKay, let's start here and talk about. So you see, there's two sides of this thing. So what I'm seeing now, as I dig down a little bit more, is that the Palestinians are saying, listen, they're planning to do this for 6 weeks, coming forward till May 15th. And of course, Israel comes out just yesterday and says, you know, we're going to escalate this thing forward if this keeps going. Looks like it's going to maybe a moment of truth here.
Well, Israel never threatens without having the ability to take action. If Hamas continues to fire missiles or anything across the border, Israel will respond. It's not their policy to let these things go unchallenged. So if they did hit that many people, they had just cause in doing it.
Yeah. Well, it started with just, I guess, reports of protesting and riots on the Gaza Strip there. Ava, from what we're seeing, I mean, there wasn't any one incident that seemed to fuel this thing. It just seemed like this was a call to protest, if you will, which we've seen many times before there. But you always wonder where a spark is going to start and where this thing might go. There's a lot of talk, you know, there's been talk about Jared Kushner working with the Israelis and certainly other players in the Middle East here, and the president with his, you know, big plans of peace in the Middle East. But, you know, with this kind of uprising here right now, it's hard to say that peace is anywhere near a possibility in the short term, huh?
Well, bottom line is the Palestinian people want a state of their own. That's at the very crux of this. If they had anybody to really be angry with, it should have been the League of Nations back in 1922. If you really want to get right. historical about right. this, you know, that's when this all, you know, came to fruition. And it was actually the British that, you know, gave Israel the land that it now has. So they really shouldn't blame Israel. You know, I feel like Israel's kind of the personhood here that's being slighted in many ways. And here we are, we're surrounded, you know, in Palestine or in the Palestinian Gaza area. There's lots and lots of Arab nations that could cede some land mm-hmm. to the Palestinian people. Why doesn't that happen? And I think President Trump may even be exploring that as I speak.
Interesting. There seems to be no real solutions that when we talk about a two-state solution out there. Ava, you bring up a good point about land. It's kind of odd how they just fight over the same stuff, knowing that there's no solution to it, there's no answers to it. It seems like nobody wants to move off their point here, and it just continues to fuel. And this thing has been going on forever. But you bring up a valid point with, you know, where are the other solutions? And maybe there is some other land we could look at. But wouldn't it be so nice to get a permanent answer to this ongoing problem that's been going on for long as we can remember, Jim?
Absolutely. I mean, Ava's very correct when said none of the other Arab nations want to take in the Palestinians or give them land. Mm-hmm. There used to be a region called Transjordan, which was the West Bank,
right.
and an area of Jordan. And after the Six-Day War in 1967, when Israelis were on the, you know, on the doorstep of Cairo, and had beaten all of the Arab nations back, they took over the West Bank. And at that time, the Palestinians that had this Transjordan area, which was it really wasn't a state as such. It was, nobody recognized it as such, but it was where they had settled in, and everybody was kind of tolerating that. That disappeared completely. So, you know, when they say they want to restore, some people say they want to restore the 1967 borders. Mm-hmm. That was a big push from Obama. And very controversial because you look at Israel, at some points, it's all of about 18 or 19 miles wide, and that's one of them. And with all these hostile nations surrounding them, and most of them pledging and talking and after 67 and the multiple wars after that, are set on the annihilation of the Jewish state. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to think about giving more land back.
Well, there is no land to give back, obviously. Yeah, I mean, there's not. As you say, there's just hardly anything there. I have visited out there. I understand the geography out there. It's amazing.
Whether they want to admit it or not, Israel is a nuclear state. So,
And they certainly can defend themselves, Jim. They're like an island with all the hostilities around them. It's truly, truly amazing. You can only say that is an act of God right there when you look at the Jewish state and you see how they have. And they truly are a miracle. It's nothing short of a tremendous miracle. What happens in that country is, if you've ever visited out there, you know that already, folks. The commerce and the technology and the innovation that comes from this little state is really, really, truly amazing. So also in the region there, another report here in the last day or so with Iran, by the way, it's being reported that the Iranian news site is reporting the country will block the Telegram messenger service for reasons of national security. Now listen to this. The head of the Parliamentary Committee on National Security and Foreign Policy says the decision was made at the highest level and the app would be replaced by, yeah, some kind of a local system to keep people shut up for the moment here. Now, I found this story very interesting when I dug for it, and because it's kind of happening right here with all the uprising in Gaza, and I was trying to see, well, what's the connection here? Well, it goes on further here. The decision was a response to what they are calling Telegram's destructive role in anti-government protests that began, as you might remember, in December, in which 25 people were killed at least, and nearly 5,000 were arrested in Iran with those uprisings. Now, this app, with some 40 million users in Iran, was temporarily shut down during those protests coming into January. I think, Ava, about 10% of Iranians found a way around it through proxies and VPN services, which is interesting because it shows you how you can't keep technology, you can't keep people down. I mean, technology has opened this up tremendously. But here we are again talking about countries that are shutting off the communication pieces. But this is pretty common in a lot of these dictator-driven countries where they just shut the faucets off to social media completely. Not really a surprise here, I guess, with Iran doing that. I think they're a little worried right now with the protests and seeing with all of the other disruptions happening in the Middle East, huh?
I think there's a great transformation that's coming across the Middle East itself. Wow. I mean, I think Islam itself will be transformed. It'll be a reformation movement, very similar to the movements that have taken place in Judaism and Christianity over the many centuries. I think this is long overdue for Islam. And, you know, all of these different Arab nations and states and so forth, they'll need to talk amongst themselves and they'll need to decide really where they want to go. And Iran is very much in the back seat. They're way far behind. They were at one time, you know, Beirut was the jewel of the Middle East. It was a, you know, very modern society, very open, very progressive. You know, women were, you know, equal to men. And to see photographs of that time, I mean, back in the early 70s, late 60s, I mean, you know, that was a very up and coming place. And all of a sudden, you know, during the Shah, you know, being overthrown in, what was it, 1979, I believe, everything changed. It's like you went back to the Stone Ages. And it's really frightening when you see something like that happen, because I often wonder, oh, gosh, you know, could something like that ever happen in the United States?
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, it's going to take a generation of new leaders out there. And as Jim was pointing out a moment ago, like with the Prince Solomon out of the Saudi Arabia, and where they're changing, so even by, you know, giving more rights to women and doing other things in Saudi Arabia, which we know has been a real criticism of that country for a very long time. But it is going to take a new generation of leaders and people that, I want to say to you, think slightly a bit different and that are willing to look for other answers. And like you mentioned earlier, Jim, too, about, well, maybe looking at other possibilities of other land. At some point, somebody has to give something up to be able to get to the point of peace, if that's really going to happen here. So again, you know, in this holiday weekend, we can only wish and hope for the very, very best. I want to change here the tempo a bit here, and I want to talk to you about the President Trump here. Just here yesterday, he has he's come out and escalated the attacks on Amazon. He's demanding the Washington Post register as a lobbyist. Get a load of this here now. In a series of tweets yesterday morning, Saturday morning, in fact, that were designed to needle Amazon, he says the internet commerce giant maintains an advantageous relationship with the U.S. Postal Service amounting to a scam worth billions of dollars. And it goes on to say, while we are on the subject, it is reported that the U.S. Postal Service here will lose $1.50 on average for every package it delivers for Amazon. Now, he puts this in Twitter here. That amounts to billions of dollars. The failing New York Times reports that the size of the company's lobbying staff has ballooned. Wow. So Trump added that Amazon's lobbying staff does not include the fake Washington Post. So it's not just the fake New York Times, Jim, but it's the fake Washington Post now as well. And that the newspaper, which is owned by BNN, Amazon's CEO, not exactly Trump's best bud, Jeff Bezos, is a lobbyist and should register accordingly. So he's asking for Bezos to register as a lobbyist. And it, which was pretty wild. So now a lot of this was a counterpunch, I'm going to suggest to you, Jim, because what happened is the Post on Saturday morning came out with stories about the damage being done to the president's family real estate and marketing business by all of these reports on the Stormy business and Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe were a lot of the stories, and that must have really got under his skin a bit, and he lashed out through Twitter. What do you think becomes of this war? It looks like it's going to be escalated here with these recent series of tweets here with the president. Who wins this one, Jim?
I think nobody wins. I think it's just a lot of hyperbole on both sides. The post office is reaping billions and billions in profits and revenue from their dealing with Amazon. They're scared to death of Amazon starting their own delivery service.
They're going to do that, Jim.
They're
definitely starting their own. Yeah. But the United States Postal Service is a train wreck with or without Amazon.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, the amount... Everything that was shipping with UPS mm-hmm. and with FedEx and with other delivery services, mm-hmm. the amount of packages going through U.S. Postal Service right. with Amazon is supplying them is a huge number. It's huge revenue for the post office. You take that away and taxpayers are going to eat another $3 or $4 billion.
And, you know, the president's not – that's interesting you say that, Jim, because the president's not acknowledging any of that with these series of tweets and these other problems. That's interesting, yeah. Bring up a valid point, though.
That's typically mm-hmm. Trumpism in terms of conflict. throw something out there, see who it sticks to, and then come out with the realism
well said.
Later on.
Well said. Well said. No, that's well said. But I'm assuming that's what he did here with all of this. But I think this war with Jeff Bezos is going to flare up more. I think he's going to. I don't think it's going to. I think it's going to get a little more uglier before it gets better. I do think Amazon may very well potentially. They're pretty well down the road now with trying to start their own delivery service. I think they're going to do it. I'll also tell you both one other thing. I think the United States Postal Service in 10 years won't even be here anymore. It'll be gone. There'll be no U.S. Postal Service. It'll move on because all the private entities have come in now. And of course, that's not really government. Owned, it's just we subsidize it, which is a really strange quasi-relationship we have with the Postal Service, you know? It's a private entity, yes. But we have to keep it afloat because they're just horrible in their management, and I've reported that many, many times over the years. Listen, I want to talk to you about one other thing here that's really important that I find very fascinating. I think you both will as well. So civil liberties attorney, Alan Dershowitz. So get a load of this now. So this is another thing I uncovered here. He says this week that he is fearful of the criminalization of political differences in today's discourse and that he doesn't think special counsels are the right way to approach criminal justice. Now he says, and I quote, these are his words, I think the investigation should end, and I think the Congress should appoint a special nonpartisan commission. He says he thinks a congressional committee would be too partisan. And to wrap this up, he says, that's the... Now, listen to this here. Ava, this is very fascinating. That's the way it's done in other Western democracies, he says, Dershowitz says. He said they don't appoint a special counsel and then tell them to go get that guy. That's what they did in the Soviet Union. And he goes on to compare the head of the KGB when he said to Stalin, show me the man, then I'll find you the crime. That's what special counsels do, he says. He has some pretty biting words. I haven't heard much reported on this, but I find it quite fascinating that Dershowitz comes out and says that, which we're all kind of shaking our heads on this side, saying, what is the role, really, of the special counsel? He says he thinks Congress should appoint a special nonpartisan commission, is what he's saying, Ava, and he doesn't like these special counsels at all. What do you think about that?
Does such a thing exist?
Yes.
You know, what he's talking about right now in America is a unicorn, okay? And I love Dersh because I follow him on Twitter. I think he's a brilliant man. Mm-hmm. I love to listen to his opinions. He is a constitutional conservative. He's a libertarian, okay? Mm-hmm. He's really not a Democrat, which a lot of people think he's a Democrat, but I don't think he is. He leans libertarian very much. Mm-hmm. He's very inventive in his ideas, right. And I love to listen to them. But I think the bottom line is here, I think the Department of Justice should actually be doing its job. And if the Department of Justice has corruption within, then I do think a special prosecutor needs to be appointed, and hopefully one that's nonpartisan, but like I said, I think you're wishing for something that isn't real.
I think you're right. When Ava says it's a unicorn, I mean, she's even, you know, I mean, that's there's no stretch in that statement. I mean, unicorns don't exist, and nonpartisan people probably don't exist either word. Yeah, no, it is. But I do find the comments very interesting with Dershowitz. And again, I'm not sure, when Sessions came out this week and said a second special counsel is not going to happen. I think, as you say, Ava, it's so over the top, and everyone's got a backbone that goes one way or another way politically. And obviously that drives into everything that's happening here out of Washington, because everybody has an agenda. There's nobody that, like you say, unicorns don't exist. I totally agree with that statement. And I don't think a second special counsel, although I was in favor of it, I'm not sure that's going to get the answers either, since it's so corrupt up there. You know, I think it's not a stretch to say we have forgotten our heritage and the founding of this great nation. And I think we're letting all these differences, as petty as they may be, divide and cripple the country. So, listen, our nation is in chaos, many would say, and driven by uncertainty. You might say we've lost our direction and substituted socialism and political correctness for individualism, responsibility, and freedom. We'll take up next America the Beautiful.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
As we celebrate the two holidays of Easter and Passover this week, many of our fellow Americans have forgotten much of the history of this country. The role of individual responsibility, for instance, the role of religion and of faith, the Christian and Judaic principles this nation was founded upon. You know, it's a history of men and women crossing oceans to come to a land barren of even the few comforts they may have had in Europe. 150 years later, the children of these brave colonists decided to form a new nation to cast off the bondage and oppressions that they thought they had left behind in Europe, which were now seeping into their everyday lives again. Well, these founders of our nation conceived a Declaration of Independence. They fought a long war, and they charted a government whose mission was to provide freedoms guaranteed for all citizens of this fledging nation. Well, these guarantees are contained within the Constitution and the first 10 amendments to that document. They became known as the coveted Bill of Rights. Well, America was a new idea. No nation had ever had the freedoms that we enjoy today and that are based upon this historic document charted 229 years ago. Well, these men were not perfect, my friends, but show me a man that is. But they produced a uniquely representative republic that was and still is the envy of the world. Please welcome to the show our panel discussion here, Terry Beatley. Terry promised America's abortion king that she'd arm Americans with the truth of how he deceived our country with the lie that abortion is health care. Well, to accomplish the mission, she founded Hosea Initiative. It's a nonprofit educational organization and authored the book, What If We've Been Wrong? Now, you may know that name, What If We've Been Wrong? It's the same name of Terry's brand new talk show that she is the host of on America Out Loud. That show is every day at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the platform. You know, she shines the light of Christ into the darkness of Marxism, socialism, and globalism. All three things that we target every day on this platform and on this show right here. Joining us on the panel discussion, Jim McKay is here. He knows about that conversation. He's a political commentator, as you know, radio producer. And Jim is here along with Ava Armstrong. Again, political commentator, radio personality. Ava is an author as well. You know both of those. They're regulars here and producers of our program here. I want to talk about religion being the centerpiece in the founding of this country. But today it seems that this has been eliminated from most public venues and from people's lives. Terry, let's start, and let me put you right on the spot here and ask you, is this a failing of our society today?
Oh, I definitely think it's a failure in our society today, primarily because our young people they're not being taught that our rights come from God. They're being indoctrinated into the notion of our rights come from government. But they're not being taught, you know, either by their parents or through church or you know, public school, that our rights come from God. And when we take our eyes off of that, where our rights come from, that's a slippery slope. And we're halfway down that slippery slope. Yeah. Right, Malcolm?
Yeah, it seems that we are. I mean, it does seem that we are. I've been critical of this, Ava, for a long time now, with the fact that, you know, it started with taking prayer out of, you know, out of the schools. And then, you know, it got really nasty. I mean, it's been nasty even in, you know, even in sports, where they're kneeling in disrespect to nations and God and just individual freedoms. I mean, they've taken what we fought for, what we've died for, what this country is, and they've kind of rubbing our face into it. I don't know, there's something messy about the whole thing. There seems to be, I mean, there are a lot of patriots out there, Ava. I listen, you know that full well. You're associated with patriots every day. People that are putting the good fight out there. We talk about these people every day. They're representative of America Out Loud. They're representative of our country. But somehow it's the simple things of just prayer, pledge of allegiance, even the dinner table at home in the family. Yeah, the simple, simple fundamentals of, you know, the Leave It to Beaver days that made this country very unique what it is today. But there's a lot of people that want to pull that out of a societal fabric, Ava.
True. And I always think of the words of Benjamin Franklin. We gave you a republic if you can keep it. And that's really going to be our challenge as, you know, Americans, is to, you know, inform our young people what this country is about. And so many schools now have no mention of God in any way. No prayer. There's, you know, even the Pledge of Allegiance is now being taken away. And I'm very concerned about our common American culture being destroyed. That's what keeps us together. That's what keeps a diverse society together, is a common American theme, a common culture.
That is a great point. And that seems to me what's missing right now is we're not rallying around a common theme. You know, the one time I can think of in the last 20 years where Americans were really Americans, the only time I can think about, and you know where that moment was, all of you do, it was right at 9/11. That mm-hmm. was the moment when the country rallied together and they forgot that they were, you know, whether they had a D, an R, or an I, or whatever they had. They really became Americans, and there was an outrage, and they stood up for justice, feeling that we were being violated, that we were hit in a way that we hadn't been before, certainly in our lifetimes. But I think we sort of lose that momentum, Jim. We forget all of that, and then we go back to our fight, and we go back to our ways, and then, as Ava says, well, then what happens to the republic? And as she quotes Ben Franklin, I mean, what does happen to the republic at that point when we're not rallying around a common theme or something where we can say, you know, we stand for this, Jim? And we don't see that a lot today.
No, we don't. We have two factions in the country. We have those who want the American republic. We have those who have created this hyphenated society, Spanish American, Black American, Asian American stuff. And that is done purposely to divide this melting pot, to divide the unity, the assimilation that took place in the 17th, 18th, 19th, and good part of the 20th century. All of a sudden, it wasn't good enough to be just an American. It wasn't fashionable to be an American. And now we're dividing it. And they divide it for a purpose. The purpose is to attract different political factions to their false promises. Once you've done that, you have nothing more to stand for. And the way they maintain that is by giving these people, this underclass of minorities, mm-hmm. the people who are disenfranchised, giving them. I mean, 50% of the country is on some type of government assistance. And when you have 50% of the people on some type of assistance, that's all you need to get the vote. That's that rainbow coalition. And it's not a rainbow. It's really a thunderstorm of disaster.
Well, Jim, isn't it true, though, that if you want to keep the power, if you've got the power and you want to keep the power, isn't it true that the way to do that is to keep the people divided, which is what you're saying? But that's kind of part of the strategy, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the biggest things they have going for them in maintaining that strategy is government employee unions. And when you think about it, you have hundreds of thousands of members of those in every one of the major states, because that's where your government employees are located. Maryland, Virginia, New York, California, different place. Not huge government enclaves out in the middle of Iowa or Nebraska. So it's these states, and if you have 100,000 or 200,000 employees that are on the government payroll, mm-hmm. and guess how they vote? They're going to vote for institutions that are going to keep them on the payroll and keep their salaries going up, because the home crowd is going to vote for that.
Yeah, and Jim, just to double up on what you're saying about 50% of the nation on, you know, government handouts in one form or fashion, many of those people need help and a leg up. But then, of course, many people are just riding the system for every dollar they can get out of it. But what that essentially does, though, is it usurps the role of the church in communities. I mean, it should be the church's role to be a provider, but the government has now usurped the role of the church. And now, I mean, even look at, say, like the Catholic Church getting millions of dollars from the government, like for Catholic charities, when it should not be, you know, the government doing it. This should be solely the job of the church. So to me, I find that really sad, because it's given people one more reason to sit back and just let big government do everything.
Wow. You know, the point you bring up, Terry, you never hear that today. Ava, I don't think I've heard that, and I don't even know how long, what Terry says there about the church having that sole responsibility. What do you say to that?
It's so true. We've gone so far away from our true values in this country. It's very alarming to me. And I think we need to talk about how this affects our people in America. How does it affect them personally, on a personal level? The suicide rate among youth is just incredible right now. I've never seen it this high. And I keep asking myself, why? Why is this? Why do these young people feel so like there's no point for their existence? And it's a hopelessness. It's a helplessness. And they turn to opioids. And this is all tied together, believe me.
It's all tied together.
And if you have no point mm-hmm. for your existence, mm-hmm. then you will turn to these things. And that's what's happening. We have an entire young group of people mm-hmm. who've never been exposed to religion. And the parents mm-hmm. that are letting this go, let me just say this one thing. You are robbing your child mm-hmm. of one of the most beautiful experiences. It's a touchstone for them. It's something positive. It's a reason to be. It's good. And when you take that away, or you eliminate it from their life, or you choose not to expose them to it, you're robbing them of something beautiful.
That is so well said. Wow. Mm-hmm. That is so well said. Let's talk a moment about the Constitution and the crossroads we find ourselves at right now. So our nation was conceived under this rule of law, guaranteeing the freedom to all the people, as you're saying, Ava, as well. Now this is under attack by government corruption at the highest levels. We're seeing this everywhere. We're seeing things, you know, they're pulling down statues, they're burning things. There's a movement out there it's very disruptive. It's a movement of disruption. The name that comes up a great deal when disruption is mentioned to the level of what I'm speaking about right now is George Soros and company. And a lot of people who play in that realm that want to, how do I say, pull America down a few notches. There's a fight. There's a real fight in America right now. It really is. It's a big fight. The deep state is really hoping to transform the nation into a socialist regime. I mean, let's call it as it is. And I dare any of you to argue this back with me, but it really is turned into a socialist regime. It's being run by institutional bureaucrats and the very elitist, if you will, that run the system. Now, many of these cats call themselves senators, congressmen, and, you know, and these people are ultimately wealthy off the people and off of all of this malarkey that goes on up in Washington, clearly. Let's talk about the framers of the Constitution a moment now. The Constitution, question I have for you, is it to be taken literally as written or interpreted by the agenda of different political organizations over time? Jim, I want you to answer that first, please. The Constitution itself I'm speaking about.
Absolutely. You look at the time frame from the Declaration of Independence to the time the Constitution was ratified, 1776 to 1789. From the end of the war, which was in 81, they spent 7.5 years framing this document and how the government was to be structured. Somebody didn't go off over the weekend and write the Constitution. It didn't happen that way. Every word in there has meaning. It's a short document. And when if you read the First Amendment and how it addresses freedom of speech and religion, and then when you get even down to the 10th Amendment, and you specifically say those powers which are not enumerated within the document, the Constitution, are reserved to the states, it's a very, very mindful type of a concept. So the Constitution, I look at it, is a literal interpretation of the document. What's in there is what you go with. And over the last 50 years, it's been totally bastardized by progressive and liberal interpretations.
It's like going back farther than just 50 years, when you go back to the 17th Amendment, to me, if we could reverse the 17th Amendment, it would solve 90% of our problems.
Wow.
And this is why. So the 17th Amendment, I mean, our founding fathers knew how to do it. So, you know, so we elect our congressmen. But the way it was originally written, which the average American doesn't understand, it was the state legislatures would be the people who elected or appointed, or I guess you'd say elected, are each state's 2 U.S. senators.
Right.
And then those senators, instead of being beholden to special interest groups and to the big guys who give them money, they're now beholden to their individual state legislators.
To the people.
To the people. Mm-hmm. And yep. We did away with that I get to vote. Yeah. And you know, so I even look at it as, instead of a convention of the states, everybody ought to be getting behind, let's reverse the 17th Amendment. Because if you give me a senator who's willing to vote to reverse the 17th Amendment, that's a senator who really does want to save the republic.
Exactly.
Well, also, you know, term limits. At the time the founders put the Constitution together, I mean, they had to travel months sometimes to get to Washington or Philadelphia, where they were doing the documents, and even New York at some portions of time, to sit down and have these discussions. It wasn't like you got on an airplane and you were there in 2.5 hours or anything like that. But the point being, they did not envision permanent government bureaucracy run by career politicians who were beholden to lobbyists or anything like that. You served a term in Congress, then you went back to the farm, you went back to your pharmacy, you did whatever you're doing in normal life. And it was a government of the people, and in including those people that were running it. And we've lost that completely. It's a government of Congress, for Congress, by Congress.
Well, the framers were brilliant in the way that these Bill of Rights and the way they work with each other and the thought that was put into that, but more so how it was, as you're saying, Jim, not to let a federal government become a runaway train, which is what we have today. It doesn't bring it back to the state level, which is really where we need to keep this thing so individual freedom is alive and well. It is interesting how we've lost a lot of that and how this, and then you you take a look at, you know, this big argument about unlimited open borders and no rule of law, really, fights against law enforcement, focus on things. I mean, there's a current underneath this country and this nation that is in place to dismantle it very clearly. I mean, you can't do the math here and look at all the things we're talking about, not realize that there's a movement that is alive and well in this country that, you know, quite frankly, that you fight every day. Jim McKay fights every day. Terry Beatley fights every day. And our platform fights every day. This wave that runs under the nation right now. Don't you think?
I do agree with that. And I think that we can fight it, though, on a very personal level. For example, if I were a child in a school, let's say I'm, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 years old, and, you know, Muslim children have prayer rooms, okay, in school. They're given prayer rooms, and they can pray 5 times a day. I would insist that I have a Christian prayer room that I could go to at least once a day and pray. And this, under the Constitution, this would be granted if people were fighting for this, you know, loudly enough. Mm-hmm. Prayer needs to be back in our lives, and not just in schools. It needs to be in homes. It needs to be in a community church. It needs to be constant. It's a touchstone that needs to be constantly tended like a garden. And it's not just something that you use for the bad times in your life. It's the celebratory times too.
It is indeed, yeah. Well, listen, friends, to say this, you hear the power of this conversation right now on Viewpoint this Sunday. And it should give you hope. It should put you in a pause mode in your life to give you hope. Listen, big thank you again for this special conversation here with Terry Beatley, Ava Armstrong, Jim McKay. Up next, friends, we're going to dive into trade and tariffs, talk a little bit more about China, Korea, Western Europe, what's going on. Is this a brilliant strategy by the president, or is he poking where he shouldn't be? And what is this whole disruptor thing? This is the chief and disruptor. Is that what we say here? We'll talk about all that change in the next segment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on americaoutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Okay, welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. And listen, we are back here talking to Ava Armstrong. Jim McKay are here. We want to take a look here at these trade and tariffs and China, Korea, Western Europe, a lot that's going on there. You know, in the past few weeks, we've seen President Trump propose trade tariffs on steel and aluminum. That was a big, big story. And the financial world, they went crazy. They were insane, just about insane. And I want to get into the root cause of this and why it happened. But, you know, 10 days later, we've seen reality where financial markets have stabilized. And then, you know, a lot of things have happened since. We've seen the up and down of the market, the uncertainty. Of course, a lot of this people would say is just the manipulation of Wall Street. And obviously, financial people that are just doing what they do well, which is taking advantage of markets. Jim, that's not really an unusual thing. But let's take a look here a little bit more here, because there's some interesting points to this. Now, the tariffs and penalties amount to $60 billion on China. Now, listen to this here, a $17 trillion economy. China strikes back with $3 billion in tariffs, pretty small, in fact, on the U.S. I'm speaking of here now, when compared to a $580 billion trade deficit. And people don't realize how massive this is. Talk to me a minute about this entire insanity here. The point of this is, was President Trump's announcements of the tariffs plan, again, as you always say, Jim, throwing something out there to bring the parties to the bargaining table initially, you think?
Absolutely. He doesn't make moves, you know, insanely, as the media would want you to think. He does things very well planned out and coordinated. He knows the answers to the questions before he asks them. And doing things like saying, we're going to put a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum. He knew that that was going to upset the Canadians and the Mexicans, Canada, the largest importer of steel to the United States. It wasn't going to affect China that much, and it was going to rile up the people on Wall Street. And he did that because he knew that he was going to come out with the targeted tariffs and penalties on the Chinese 10 days later. So what happened? Wall Street takes advantage of, A, the tariffs being announced. The markets swing almost over 1,000 points. Then things settle down. The markets come back up. So they sell short. They buy in at a lower price. They make trillions of dollars in the marketplace over things like this. The markets do not move that big on private investment. It takes, for the little guys to get out of the markets, takes 3-4 days thinking about it. And most of them get counseled by their investment brokers, stay in the market, it's coming back. And people who would have sold off, they would have gone out of the market, paid huge taxes, and then not have the capital get back into the marketplace. So that would have been a huge thing. 1,000 points on the market today is not a big deal when we see swings of 200 and 300 points on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. So this was all known in advance by both sides. Everybody knew what they were doing. We got the Chinese to the bargaining table.
Right.
We also got a South Korea trade agreement, which was very substantial in what we benefited from there. Mm-hmm. And lost in this whole thing was Federal Reserve increased the discount rate by, I think it was a quarter, not quite a quarter, I don't think it was a quarter percent, it might have been an eighth of a point, but they increased the discount rate, the trading rate at the Fed window. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there were other things going on in the world that nobody, seemed to care about why all this noise was happening with the marketplace.
Sure. Well, again, and you certainly don't care about it, Jim, if you're making trillions of dollars you can put in your back pocket, or at least billions maybe. But the market did get a lot of people wealthy, didn't it, in the past few weeks. So some people made some serious money there. Many of these cats who are griping and bitching up front about all this are making money hand over fist, Ava. You know that.
They're making money hand over. Exactly.
And they're like, what I see them is yelling out the window, Jim, like at people like say, oh, this guy stinks, his president's no good. And yet these are the same people. Go get him. I bet you they're walking back into their offices and their homes saying, go get him, Trump. We love this guy. We love this guy. I mean, they're making money hand over fist, Jim. You know?
They are very apolitical on Wall Street. They're all about the money. They don't care who's in the office.
Right.
If the market's going down, they're making money. If the markets are going up, they're making money. If the markets are going sideways, they're making money.
Yeah.
I mean, who makes the most money on Wall Street? It's hedge funds. And think about it. What are hedge funds? Hedge funds are people getting together, betting something's going to fail, that it's going to lose.
And they don't play by the regular rules either.
No. Not at all.
Of course not. They make their own rules. No.
Right.
Yeah, of course they do. You know, Ava, there's the big thing here I'm seeing with all of this, and let me say all of this here, because this president is a disruptor. Total. I've said this before, but listen to what we're talking about here now. He's a game changer, Ava. Now, my sense is that if we the people are truly looking for a different result from the business as usual crowd in Washington, then that only happens with real change. And if you look historically at our track record, change is always uncomfortable. Do you ever see this strong opposition to the president right now, Ava, changing? Think about him. He's a disruptor. He's rocking this whole thing. He's creating waves. Many of them are not saying what they really think out in the public. They're hiding it back. They know the president was up for the challenge. This president, he is actually, I've been amazed at watching him in the strategic nature of him, and that he really is here at a very historically interesting moment of time in our country's history. I'll have to tell you, as much as people either hate him or love him. But do you ever see the strong opposition to the president changing, Ava?
I think it will change over time. I think results will be what they will judge him on, and not, whatever little personality quirk he may have or however he parts his hair. I mean, all of this is being driven, this hate is being driven on a level that is doesn't really make sense to me. I'm the kind of person that I don't care who you are, as long as you're producing results and you love this country and you're you know, somewhat decent human being, then you're president, you're good, you know. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, Jim, I do see the fact that he is making such, you know, these are massive changes he's making to the structure that's in place. Now, people typically don't like change. They don't like this kind of massive change, and they like to keep things just as they are, which is why, you know, things get kind of stale after a while. It's why freedom can only prevail if you're willing to fight for it, Jim, if you're willing to change the status quo. Other than that, you'll go down as another lost empire in time, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, I think that what's happening today is Obama came in on this program of transforming America. And the word transforming comes right out of the Marxist and Alinsky dialogues. And for 8 years, he was going down this road of putting more people in poverty, more people on food stamps, more people on government dependence. Trump comes along, he says, enough of that. I know people don't want that. They want our country back. Make America great again. Mm-hmm. Was basically a call to restore the freedoms that we all cherish and love. Get government off of our backs. So now he's doing it. He's done away with thousands of regulations. Mm-hmm. He's changing the landscape in Washington. I can't wait till he starts doing things like closing the Department of Education, which has no basis in the Constitution and no basis for existence. It doesn't do anything except spend money and employ people. So you have this huge disruption. You have the Obamaites on one side saying, oh my God, he stopped what we were doing, you know? And Nancy Pelosi says, well, we got to get back to restoring what Obama was doing. I mean, she's out and out said that. And all the middle of America that, in the people that voted, even in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, voted for Trump saying, enough is enough. I want our country back. And so it's a battleground. It definitely is. It's going to be very interesting to see how the elections go in November.
Yeah, it is. I do find it really, really fascinating, the whole political structure right now and where we find ourselves. But, you know, I in listening to you, just your response right there was perfect, Jim, and saying this, that I think it should give everybody a moment to pause here. And really, I just count your blessings, give thanks, because this is all by design. What's happening right now, I'm going to suggest to you, I think is supposed to happen. Again, historically, as you study our country, anytime we go down one path too far or we swing too far to the one side, we have a tendency to snap back. I've said this right along, and we're seeing it right now, and that's why you're seeing the dramatic nature, why things look so, well, a lot of people would say, Jim, they're very radical. Well, it's because you had someone like a president like Obama who took the country in one direction, but far, far to that side. And it was headed down a path that a lot of people did not really like. Some people liked it, but not the majority of Americans, obviously. And so the country, in order to snap it back, you need a radical disruptor and a changer like a Donald Trump to come in. Those guys are not easy to find, friends. I got to tell you right now. So having said that, he is a unique character for a unique moment in time. And it should give everybody, I think, a bit of relief or pause today to think that, you know, the country, the chaos is designed. This is, let me call this, Ava, Jim, organized chaos. This is organized chaos. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Yeah. And I think there is such a thing. I think there is such a thing as organized chaos, Jim, Ava. And I think this is organized chaos. And I think everybody should sleep well tonight knowing that, you know, we're headed on a track here. Things are stabilized. We've got things where they need to be. The people are still going to fight. The people are still going to yell and scream out their windows, and they're going to lie like hell, come back into their offices and their homes and count their blessings and, yeah, I got it, because they're making big money. And this president's been very good for the business. He's been very good for the economy, very good for these fat cats, been very good for everybody. And he's been very good for middle America. So he's been good for a lot of people in America who, and that's the way a capitalistic society should work. I don't think you penalize the people at the top or any more than you penalize the people at the bottom. I think the capitalist system is, you know, you go get it. You get off your, you know, you get off your duff and you go make it happen. Listen, our last few moments here, I want to talk to you real briefly about South Korea, China, Kim Jong-un, the trip here that he just had in Beijing by Chinese President Xi Jinping, that he was, well, many people think he was ordered there, but he went by train to visit him. That was sort of a surprise visit. There were no, obviously, advance notices. Some people are even questioning that they think that this Trump-Kim summit is just a ruse and it's not going to come off. What do you think about that?
Oh, no, I think the summit will definitely take place. I think this was laying the groundwork. I think Xi met with Kim to let him know how this was going to go down. You have to understand that China's holding all the cards here in this whole deal. And they're orchestrating this because they want to keep a good relationship with the United States. They want to please Donald Trump, our president. So all of this will go forward. And I think in the end, I think it will also disrupt Iran's nuclear program. So we'll be getting a twofer.
A two for one, huh? Well, and we've talked about that, Jim, that, you know, Iran hasn't been in the news as much. It's been quiet, obviously. They're having their own problems out there with the protests, the uprisings, and, you know, they've got other issues out there, as well as a plummeting economy, people, the stress out there for average Iranians who are really trying to live some sort of a normal life is probably more front and center there in Iran than most people think, because, you know, that's at the end of the day, that's what people really want, is a really a good quality life, raise their kids, their families, and have decent education, you know, be able to work and so on and so forth. But Iran's been very quiet in recent years. I think the focus has been on North Korea. How do you think Iran figures into this in the big picture, Jim, as this happens now with this summit with Trump and Kim, and if it does indeed happen?
Well, I think the summit will happen, and I think the triangulation of the United States and China, and with the target being North Korea, is going to be a very mandated result out of China and the United States. They will have to abandon their nuclear program. Once they do that, the relationship with Iran is completely off. There's nothing else that Iran gains from a relationship from North Korea. It's definitely not trade. It's not, definitely not other, you know, human rights factors or anything like that, other than the two countries are totally abusive to their populations. Kim was not taking a vacation excursion when he was called to Beijing. It was get your butt over here, sit down and listen, don't open your mouth. And you could see that in the way they walked up through the Great Hall at the end of the negotiations. Right. Here was the leader of China in a tailored suit, and this the Korean guy in what looked like, you know,
bell bottoms from the 70s.
I was going to say, it looks like he has the same tailor as Hillary Clinton, you know.
Oh, those beautiful pantsuits, you mean? Those pantsuits?
Exactly. You know, the form-fitting tent, you know.
Yeah. Oh, dear. That's a hell of a sight there, yeah.
And he was definitely a beaten man when he right. left those negotiations. And he hasn't said boo since he's gone home. Right. You know, it wasn't like, oh, it was a wonderful visit. It was very cordial, anything like that.
There are a lot of people still talking about unification of the Korean Peninsula. Yeah, that to me is a bigger stretch here with China right in there, because with a unification, you have to think, what does the country look like at that point with North and South? And I don't think either the West isn't happy or China isn't happy at that point. And that may not be the answer ahead either, the more you look at this relationship and the way that it is. Well, friends, I want to take just a moment here, and I want to say, first of all, I want to wish you a terrific happy Easter, a holiday weekend, and Passover as well, and wish everybody good fortune. Also want to do a special shout out here and big, big thank you to Jim McKay and Ava Armstrong, who produce this show every week and have done it from the very beginning. As you hear them today on our special edition, we appreciate them very much, and we appreciate all the experts back at America Out Loud. There's a lot going back at our platform. We invite you there, friends. And please always remember this: Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is, we are always in search of the out loud truth.